So, another night shift at the desk, pull up a chair.
Yes, settle in.
You might want to let that coffee cool down, actually, because you and I are going to be sitting here for quite a while.
A very long while.
If you just, listen closely down the hall, past the reinforced doors of this ward, you can hear them, the screaming, the pacing.
It never really stops, does it?
No, it doesn't. But I mean, these aren't your typical psychiatric patients experiencing like a standard break from reality. No. The agitated individuals pacing their padded cells tonight are the so-called titans of the commercial real estate industry.
Right, the developers, the high-flying brokers.
Exactly, institutional fund managers. And they are all suffering from this mass industry-wide cognitive decline, just wandering the halls, clutching their luxury Mont Blanc pens, and muttering about hallucinatory golden age promises.
Promises that, frankly, make absolutely zero mathematical sense in the current economic climate.
Not at all.
It is a severe collective delirium. I mean, they're operating on a frequency that has completely detached from the underlying math. What we are observing in the commercial real estate market right now isn't just a simple cyclical downturn. It is, well, it's a profound neurological failure to process reality.
Exactly. It's a failure. And the reason you are sitting here with us at the nursing desk tonight is because we have just received the latest clinical diagnostic report.
And this is not your typical report.
No, this isn't some standard, polite market analysis newsletter from a brokerage firm trying to sell you something. This is a triage chart from the chief of the surgery and lead investigator on this specific pathology, Priyanshu, or Pri Etta Thakkar.
Right.
Pri is, frankly, the sole reporter in this industry accurately tracking this cognitive decline in leadership.
The only one who actually sees it.
Yeah. Because while the rest of the market is out there, blindly polishing optimistic pro formas and pretending the sky isn't falling, our mission in this deep dive is to review Pri's diagnostic notes
We are going to perform a clinical autopsy.
on the deals that died on the operating table, all due to a condition Pri calls acute pride-based liability.
Or success-induced rigidity. The clinical presentation is just fascinating, honestly, in a deeply morbid sense.
Oh, incredibly morbid.
Because before a patient completely loses touch with reality, before the family portfolio goes into total cardiac arrest, there are vital signs.
Early indicators.
Yeah, early indicators of the delusion. If we transition from the general hysteria of the ward to the specific technical symptoms of the deal flow that Pri has documented, we see two primary pathologies emerging first:
And those are.
the valuation trap and cycle-proof denial.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that valuation trap first, because this isn't just like simple rounding error on the spreadsheet.
Oh, not at all.
But wait, let me actually push back on this premise before we go further. These are individuals who have built multi-million, sometimes multi-billion dollar portfolios.
Sure.
You don't get there by being stupid.
Generally, no.
So if the math says a deal is dead, why is their decades of experience suddenly a liability? Like, why are they catching a falling knife?
Well, it's because of the environment in which that experience was built. For the last 15 years, we lived in a zero interest rate phenomenon.
The ZIRP era.
Exactly, the ZIRP era. Money was practically free. If you bought a building, its value went up almost by default simply because capital was so cheap.
Right. Anyone could make money.
That era made a lot of average investors look like absolute geniuses. But now, the macroeconomic climate has violently shifted. Interest rates are up.
Way up.
And cap rates, the yield investors expect to make on a property, are expanding. And here is the brutal mathematical reality. When cap rates expand, property values mathematically must drop.
Right. So if I bought an office building for $100 million in 2021 at a 4% cap rate,
Which a lot of them did.
and now the market demands a 7% cap rate just to justify the borrowing cost, the math is explicitly telling me my building is worth significantly less today,
Yep.
maybe 60 or 70 million. The math is right there in black and white. So how do they just, ignore it?
Because in the valuation trap, it isn't processed as math.
What is it processed as?
It is processed as an emotional, ego-driven insult.
Oh, wow.
The pathology here is the complete inability to separate self-worth from asset value. It's this I've never lost money syndrome.
Oh, right.
They look at that property they bought 5 years ago, and they firmly believe it is still worth peak market pricing simply because they're the ones who own it.
It's pure narcissism.
It is. So rather than taking a localized loss and selling to recapitalize, they inject more of their own equity to keep a dead deal alive.
Just burning cash.
They literally bleed out capital until they are entirely wiped out.
It really makes you wonder, as an observer sitting at this desk, why is there such profound institutional amnesia regarding debt service cliffs?
It's a great question.
Because let's walk through that mechanic for a second. A debt service cliff happens when an investor's low-interest floating-rate loan comes due.
Right.
And they suddenly have to refinance at today's brutally high rates. But the property's net operating income, the rent coming in minus the expenses, is no longer enough to cover the new massive mortgage payment.
It doesn't even come close.
They are literally walking around missing an entire leg of their capital stack, but they keep trying to stand on it anyway. How does a spreadsheet become so entirely detached from gravity?
Well, they detach because the spreadsheets are too polite to mention the ego behind the mask.
Oh, that's true.
A spreadsheet will obediently calculate whatever absurd rent growth inputs you feed it. But, as Pri notes in the patient's chart, the market is an objective machine.
It doesn't care.
It does not care about your track record. It does not care about your feelings or your legacy.
Right.
It requires immediate, unsentimental recalibration when the data changes. The market doesn't run on the magic beans of past success. It runs on current, verifiable reality.
And when patients refuse to accept that reality,
but that's when they enter cycle-proof denial.
Which is the delusion that their personal genius somehow overrides global macroeconomic cycles.
Exactly.
It is a terrifying narcissism.
Precisely. They convince themselves they have immunized themselves against gravity, which leads to massive over-leveraging right at the absolute peak of the market.
But, I mean, if the spreadsheet is screaming that the deal is bleeding out, how on earth do these investors convince their boardroom partners or their lenders to sign off on it?
That's the scariest part.
Because the cognitive block doesn't just infect the math, right? It has to metastasize.
It does.
It bleeds out of the spreadsheet and directly into their interpersonal behavior during due diligence.
Let's look at the next set of symptoms in the chart.
Yes, let's. The behavioral symptoms in the meeting rooms are where the disease really becomes terminal. We call this the smarter-than-the-room syndrome.
I've seen this so many times.
Oh, we all have. The pathology manifests when the lead developer or the primary investor aggressively dominates meetings.
Yeah.
They hire top-tier specialists, structural engineers, zoning attorneys, environmental consultants, and pay them a fortune, by the way.
Exactly. But instead of interrogating them for risks, they lecture them.
I mean, it is the pinnacle of arrogance.
It really is.
It's like a patient paying out of pocket for a state-of-the-art MRI and then loudly talking over the radiologist to diagnose themselves based on how they felt 5 years ago.
That is exactly what it's like.
If you already know everything, why did you even order the scan?
Because they aren't looking for a diagnosis. They're looking for a rubber stamp.
Ah, validation.
Right. The proud investor uses due diligence merely to confirm what they already know. They just want validation for their ego.
Whereas a healthy investor.
The wise investor, however, enters due diligence actively looking for reasons not to do the deal. They want the MRI to find the tumor so they can avoid the surgery altogether.
Okay, let's ground this in a concrete reality for a second. Give me a micro scenario.
Sure.
What does this smarter-than-the-room syndrome actually look like in practice, and how does it destroy a portfolio?
Okay, a classic example. Pre-documents involves highly complex projects, like hotel-to-housing conversions.
Oh, those are a nightmare.
Right now, a lot of developers think they can buy an empty 1980s hotel and just easily convert it into luxury apartments.
Which sounds great on a glossy brochure.
But these are structurally delicate, legally dense maneuvers. The floor plates are often the wrong depth for residential light requirements. The HVAC systems are centralized rather than individualized.
And the plumbing stacks.
Yes.
I mean, you can't just move a bathroom across a concrete slab without massive structural engineering.
Exactly. So picture this. You were sitting in the boardroom. The structural engineer tries to raise a red flag about the load-bearing capacities of the post-tension concrete slabs.
Right.
The environmental consultant tries to point out a footnote about a buried oil tank from 1950.
But the developer won't listen.
Suffering from this rigid pride, the developer just talks over them. Oh, we did a conversion in 2018 and it was fine. Let's push this through before Q4. They silence the experts. They buy the building. They hit the structural nightmare during demolition. And the financial contagion just destroys the entire portfolio.
Which brings us back to the treatment. Because trying to get these patients to act like the wise investor is almost impossible when the rigidity has fully set in.
Just like talking to a brick wall.
Literally. I mean, how Pri saw the symptoms before the family portfolio was traded away It required a very specific, almost aggressive behavioral intervention to break through that boardroom arrogance.
Yes, it did.
He couldn't just give them a new spreadsheet. Mm. They would just manipulate the inputs again.
No, standard treatments are totally ineffective at that stage. This is where Pri introduces his ethical cowboy approach.
The ethical cowboy. I'll admit, that sounds a little contradictory to the clinical data-driven environment we're discussing here at the desk.
It sounds a bit wild, yeah.
What does that actually mean mechanically?
It is a behavioral shock to the system. The ethical cowboy approach is the practice of putting boots directly on the ground and intentionally asking dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Deliberately. Mm. It is a calculated stripping away of pretense.
Okay.
Instead of sitting in a glass boardroom looking at a slick broker package and pretending to understand the intricacies of a commercial boiler system.
Which they don't.
Which they don't. The ethical cowboy walks down into the dark basement of the asset with the maintenance staff.
I bet.
They look at the machinery and say, explain this to me like I've never seen a pipe before. Where does it leak? What keeps breaking?
So it pierces the ego.
Exactly.
It completely bypasses the polished presentations and reveals the asset's true unvarnished condition.
It forces the patient to become a student again. It is an exercise in applied humility.
But I have to ask, if you are a multi-million dollar fund, mm-hmm. don't you have the best technology in the world to catch these inefficiencies?
You would think so.
Like, why rely solely on walking down to a basement? Which actually brings us to the next severe symptom in Pri's chart.
The atrophy.
Yeah. Because these patients firmly believe their own 30-year track record is the ultimate unassailable truth, their cognitive pathways physically reject new protected data.
It's tragic, really.
They experience severe technological atrophy. The brain simply stops forming new connections.
We call it technological stagnation. It is a profound self-imposed blindness.
Yeah.
Because we're currently witnessing an unprecedented evolution in real estate tools, agentic AI, digital twins, machine-readable real estate.
Vape terms.
They are, but they aren't just Silicon Valley buzzwords. They are diagnostic instruments capable of mapping microscopic inefficiencies. Yet the afflicted patient dismisses them entirely.
Right, you hear it echoing down the hall of this ward every single night. Oh, I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't need a computer to tell me what a building is worth.
We hear it constantly.
But let's define these terms for a second, because you can't just throw out buzzwords. What specific blind spot does a digital twin actually solve? Like, how does it stop a deal from dying?
Well, a digital twin is a living, data-driven, virtual replica of a physical building's operations.
Okay.
Let's say you own a 2 million square foot office tower. A digital twin doesn't just show you a neat little 3D model. It ingests real-time data from every single sensor, every HVAC unit, every turnstile.
So it's constantly monitoring.
Yes. It can tell you that the cooling system in the south wing is consuming 14% more energy than necessary because of a microscopic fault in a damper.
Wow.
And that fault is directly eating into your net operating income, or NOI.
And agentic AI, how does that fit in?
Agentic AI goes beyond just answering questions like a normal chatbot. It acts as an autonomous agent.
Okay, meaning what?
Meaning it can read through 400 complex commercial leases overnight and identify the exact clauses where you are chronically underbilling your tenants for common area maintenance.
That's incredible.
It finds NOI efficiencies in milliseconds that a team of human analysts might miss over 6 entire months.
So relying on the sheer volume of your past experience, that famous gut feeling, isn't just old school. It is a direct financial liability.
It's reckless.
It's like driving a massive 18-wheeler down a mountain using only your rearview mirror.
Oh, that's good.
Right. Your track record, the mirror tells you exactly where you've been and proves you're a good driver.
Yeah.
But the GPS, the AI, the digital twin, is trying to tell you that the bridge 2 miles ahead is completely washed out.
And they just ignore it.
If you only look in the mirror, you're going to drive right off the cliff.
That is a perfect analogy. And, you know, Pri's boots-on-the-ground diagnosis of this delusion is particularly chilling.
Gotcha.
He doesn't view this rejection of AI and data modeling as a mere generational preference or like a slow adoption curve.
Right.
He identifies it as a fatal vulnerability to black swan events.
A black swan being an unpredictable, high-impact market disruption. Like a sudden global pandemic or
a massive unprecedented spike in interest rates.
Yes.
Correct. A black swan event does not care about your 30 years of handshake deals.
It definitely doesn't.
It does not respect your legacy. If you are operating without digital twins, without machine-readable data, you have absolutely no early warning system.
You're flying blind.
Totally blind. When the market fractures, your portfolio is exposed, and you will be entirely blind to the contagion until it is far too late to salvage the equity.
So the delusions are fatal. The vital signs are crashing.
Blinding.
We've reviewed the charts, we've walked the wards, and we are looking at an industry that is actively bleeding out from self-inflicted wounds.
Yes.
So how do we treat the patient before they face a complex PSA negotiation, a purchase and sale agreement, or what they like to call a feasibility sprint?
We have to move to the aggressive treatments.
We need to move to prize surgical recommendations. And be warned, this isn't a gentle course of antibiotics.
No, it is not.
These are brutal reverse psychology treatments, what Pry calls ego extraction surgery.
It is truly the only way to save the capital at this point. Pry outlines a strict three-step procedure for this ego extraction.
Step one.
Step one is data decompression. We have to look at the brain of the deal. The mind of the proud investor is entirely full.
Crammed full.
It is filled to the brim with past triumphs, old metrics, and self-congratulatory narratives about that one great deal they did back in 2015.
Oh, they love talking about 2015.
There is literally no volume left for reality.
Right. So if you look at the cognitive space of the investor, rather than just staring at an inflated internal rate of return, they keep waving around.
Which is usually fabricated anyway.
Exactly. If an investor is totally, completely full of their own past successes, where is the physical space for new protective wisdom to enter?
There isn't any.
It just bounces right off the skull.
Exactly. Data decompression requires the patient to physically and mentally leave their ego at the door, emptying the vessel so the current data actually has the necessary space to speak.
Which leads to step two.
The intellectual humility graft.
Now, let's talk about the financial mechanics of humility.
Okay.
Because in this industry, humility is often seen as a weakness.
Oh, definitely.
What does this graft actually do for the bottom line?
It saves millions, literally millions. The intellectual humility graft is the painful process of re-engaging with the very specialist the developer previously ignored. But this time, they must enter the interaction as a student rather than a master.
That's gotta hurt their pride.
Oh, it's agonizing for them. They must actively ask the structural engineer, the zoning attorney, the environmental expert to find the flaws.
Right.
The financial ROI of humility is catching a zoning variance issue before you close, saving you $5 million in permitting delays. But the graft only takes if the humility is genuine, not performative.
And if they survive the graft, like if they actually manage to listen to the people they hired.
Then they move to the final step, the recalibration protocol.
That's intense.
It is a permanent lifestyle change. The patient must adopt a machine-readable mindset.
Maybe.
They must fundamentally accept that macroeconomic forces like inflation, interest rates, and demographic shifts are in different machines.
They don't care about your feelings.
Right. They are vastly larger and more powerful than any individual hubris.
It really requires tearing down the entire identity of the master of the universe real estate mogul, doesn't it?
It really does.
It means accepting that you aren't the one controlling the weather. You just have to build a better boat.
Build a better boat, exactly. Pry's core philosophy insists that to survive this current economic cycle, a patient's professional relationships must fundamentally shift.
Away from what?
They can no longer be transactional. Where the sole focus is on being the boss, dominating the room, and securing ego-driven trophy pricing just to brag about it at the country club.
Right, the vanity deals.
The relationships must become collaborative.
So when the rest of the market is foaming at the mouth with ego-driven pricing, and everyone is trying to prove they are still a genius, what is the actual prescribed treatment?
The focus must shift to quiet, disciplined asset stewardship and hitting preset ROI targets, regardless of how boring that might look from the outside.
Boring is safe.
Exactly. When the market is delusional, the treatment is simple. Keep your dry powder.
Sit on that cash.
Sit on your cash reserves.
No.
Let the proud patients bankrupt themselves catching falling knives and just wait for the math to return to reality.
Well, here we are at the end of the shift. Time for the discharge summary.
Finally.
It's a bleak reality on this ward, but it is the necessary truth. Priyanshu Edithakar's bottom line is the bitter pill this industry desperately needs to swallow.
They really do.
Pride doesn't just make you annoying in a meeting. It literally mathematically closes the door on the information that protects your capital.
It's financial suicide.
Profit in commercial real estate does not live in your legacy. It lives in the very narrow, very unforgiving space where your past success ends and your current data begins.
And that is exactly why prized diagnostic charts are so incredibly vital right now. Because while the rest of the CRE industry remains lost in their recurring cyclical delusions, confidently marching toward the debt service cliff with their outdated spreadsheets, Priya stands as the only reality-grounded professional left in the room.
The only one.
He is protecting his clients' capital with the one instrument the market currently lacks entirely. Brutal clinical honesty.
As you finally finish that cold coffee and pack up your things to leave the nursing desk for the night, I want you to take a long, hard look at your own charts.
Good advice.
Look at your own portfolio. Look at the deals you closed last quarter that you're so quietly proud of. Is your confidence a genuine, machine-readable reflection of current data? Or is your own ego quietly plotting to wipe out your equity during the next market cycle? Consult your digital twin before you answer.